Hi, everybody, and welcome to So What Happens Next. My name is Thomas.
I'm Amber.
And this week, we are going to the top of the movie lists in the world. We are going number one, all out, 100% plus ultra, whatever you want to call it. It's Citizen Kane. Widely regarded as the best movie of all time, end quote, came out in 1941, stars Orson Welles of the famous or perhaps infamous War of the Worlds radio broadcast fame. So he's the guy who did that radio broadcast from the book and made everybody think that the world was ending. This is regarded as the greatest movie of all time. Top movie ever. The end. It's been inspirations for famous actors such as Leonardo DiCaprio of Titanic fame and of the more recent Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I mean, it's supposed to be the best movie in the world, and I've never seen it. You've never seen it.
No, I have not.
Hence why we're doing it on this episode. So, Amber, I'm not going to do a five things on the board today, because how would you encapsulate what's supposed to be, at the very least, the most hyped movie of all time? It's 1941.
What's going on during that time?
Oh, World War II, for starters. We're coming out of, have been out of the Depression, but it's in living memory. On top of that, as far as movies go, like, movies are really starting to move into the talking world. I believe that we have just had Snow White, the first big Disney animated movie, and The Wizard of Oz, which I believe is like the first colored movie.
Okay.
In 1937 and 1939, respectively. This period of time is often regarded as the golden age of Hollywood. So this is when, like, some of the classic of classics are coming out, such as Wizard of Oz and, in this case, Citizen Kane.
Okay.
So I'm a studio, and I'm looking at you, and I'm going, Amber, make me the best movie you can ever think of. We got to sell tickets, girl. We got to put people in seats. What are you saying?
I think, judging from the plot of Citizen Kane, which is kind of a rags to riches.
Okay, so you're aware. I know very little about this movie. So Citizen Kane is like a rags to riches story. Is that what we're dealing with this movie?
Yeah, I think that's what it's about.
I mean, that's what we're here for. What is it about? Tell me what it's about.
I don't know anything else.
Make the greatest movie ever, apparently, out of a rags to riches story.
Yeah, but I think since this is taking place, you say World War II?
Yeah, World War II would have been going on during this time.
Okay, gotcha. But I think with anything that's going on during that time, you know, I think of, like, really great, you know, black and white films like To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh, so you think this movie might be racially charged?
I don't think it's racially charged, but it's definitely going to say something about class.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and, like, society itself.
So what's happening in this? I guess, like, what device are you using to tell your rags to riches story in apparently the greatest way that's ever
been
told?
Well, you're obviously going to show someone that's, you know, like, the normal person. And that's what people really want to see. Like, I feel like even back then, you know, yes, you had, like, your superheroes and, you know, these prominent figures in history. But eventually people were just like, well, that's not, like, I can't relate to that. Okay. But when you see someone that's, like, you know, rising up from the ashes, so to speak, or has, you know, battled a lot in their life, and they're somehow getting ahead, that's, like, there's almost, like, a hopeful, like, tone to it.
Okay, so it's relatable, and it gives you hope as the viewer.
Yeah, it gives you hope, especially, like, in a society like, you know, ours, where it's just really tough for the little man to, like, get ahead.
Yeah, and, I mean, we are coming out of, you know, Depression era. I mean, it maybe not immediately, but, I mean, the Great Depression is in living memory.
Yeah.
I mean, it's about 10 years ago for these people who are in this movie. So, yeah, I mean, rags to riches, if what you're, you know, your scenario, we'd be looking at a rags is like rags. Like, you don't have a home. You
don't
have money,
like, you're literally, like, you on the streets, you know, you're fighting for your life every day.
And then you go from that to...
Yeah, and I'm sure he does something extraordinary. I just... Of course, we don't know what it is till we watch the movie, but I'm sure it has to be something like, I don't know if it's like his mind or he invents something that, you know, helps people, but yeah.
No, that sounds like a movie that I think people would regard as like really good because especially for its time, like you have these types of tropes of like people, you know, back then a lot of movies at least the few I've seen from the 40s, mostly the 50s, is you have a lot of like, let's look at rich people because that's so cool to look at. Look at their fancy shit. Look at this nice thing. And it almost comes off in like a weird way, like what product placement is today, as in like, but on a grander scale, because it's like, look at this person's life. Look at their mansion. Look at their jewels. Look at their fancy like apartment or whatever. You don't have it, viewer. You're sitting in a 5-cent seat watching a movie about it, but you could have it if you worked real hard. And I think that that's where this movie goes. I mean... I wouldn't be surprised if there's a lot of, I guess what we call today, bootstrap mantra in this.
Yeah.
Whole, like, raising yourself up by your bootstraps.
Yeah.
And just, you know, self-made man doing this kind of thing. Then maybe for this movie's time, that was something that was, like, cool to see. And I think today, I think one of the reasons it perhaps can be continually called, you know, best movie ever is that it can be interpreted differently. Mm-hmm. I think some of the best movies that have ever been made are movies that like they might have been made with one thought in mind, such as like, let's show everybody how, you know, great capitalism is or something like that. Whereas today it can be like, hey, look how this guy is like changes so dramatically from the person he was to the person he is all because of like riches or something. I guess if I were to make like the best movie of all time, as far as a rags to riches stories go, I mean, it would have to be like this guy. We have to see a guy probably as a kid lose everything. Like and I mean, it's got to hit emotion. I mean, it's there. He probably loses his family, loses his home. And there's I'm talking no inheritance. None of this small loan of $1 million bullshit. This kid is left with nothing.
Yeah.
It could go really two ways. I think for a modern audience, him being super jaded and like angry and but driven to build something.
Yeah.
You know, that would play. But I think for 1941, I think we would want to kind of watch someone come from this doing the bootstrap thing, but like creating something that is very impactful, but is also for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
It's not kind of like today how it's like, let me make like an iPhone 20 billion and it costs $1,000 for you to buy. Well, not everybody can afford that. But I'm making lots of money, so, like, it's cool. I think in this time, like, we still have a lot of people that are probably still kind of reeling from the Depression. They're only getting back on their feet. We're about, if we have not already, gone into a war with the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think showing Americans as, like, a hoorah America, but also, like, look, I built this thing that everyone can have. Everyone can afford it. It does good. And I think this movie, what it's going to do is rags to riches. And I think it's going to get that extra bit of like, here's this thing I've made for everyone. Now watch it get ruined by everyone. Like watch it become poisoned, you know, it's kind of like Silicon Valley. is the first thing that comes to mind just because we watched it recently, but it's like, you know, spoilers for Silicon Valley and Citizen Kane, I guess, if you haven't seen it. But in Silicon Valley, they make the Pied Piper thing, right? And it's supposed to, like, revolutionize the internet. And it does. Like, it changes the game. But then it sort of becomes tainted, starting with, like, saving data for ads. And then, like, you watch as this company becomes poisoned to the point where the app becomes sentient and starts doing crazy shit. But it becomes like Skynet or whatever. But aside from that part, you do see this like downfall of like, okay, in order to play this game, you have to do this, that, and the other thing. And I think this movie, I think one of the reasons this movie stands up again is because it could be interpreted different ways. And I think what might have been, you know, another running thing is back in these days, the movies that we consider great usually didn't do too good. I mean, that's like It's a Wonderful Life, for example, did horribly because they were like, this is a bunch of communist bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, we don't like it. And I think this movie might have a theme of that, like, sure, we're doing the hoorah America capitalism bootstraps. And then, like, by the end, I think we watch, as this guy's dying or something, we get, like, and this is what made it all go fuck up.
Yeah.
Like, this is why this thing that was great became so poisoned. And it's not that the thing I made was wrong. It's like the internet, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, it's not the internet's bad.
Yeah.
It's how people use the internet. And in this case, I think whatever it was in the 40s that he makes is like, this is what made it go bad. So I'm pretty darn interested to see what this movie has to offer. I mean, it's supposed to be the number one movie ever. As far as like, I imagine that's more in like a cinematic high artsy kind of way. So I'm not expecting like, you know, the greatest Iron Man movie to ever occur. Man, we rag a lot on Marvel movies.
Yeah.
It's just there's so many and it's such an easy fucking target. But, okay, it's not like a, I don't know. Disney owns everything. It's hard not to pick a Disney franchise to fucking shit on. But, you know, it's not going to be like, oh man, Endgame was so cool. It's going to be something I think that's going to make you think more. And I think given the time, that seems to be kind of the movies that people wanted to see. It was something that's going to make you think, not an action. I mean, people liked their car chases. That was the reason that people talk more about car chases is because it was a thing in silent movies. But yeah. This movie clearly had some thought behind it. And I think people are, it's just a movie you got to think about. So that being said, give us just a quick minute. We're going to watch the trailer for this movie, and then we'll give you some final thoughts before we dive on in. All right. So, how about that trailer? There's so many things I want to say about it. Like, is that how trailers worked back then? That was so cool.
I know. They show you who the cast is, yeah, and everybody's, like waving. Yeah. Thing.
Like, what are we doing?
Yeah. But then he, like, confuses the audience because he's like, oh, like, I could tell you so much about him, but of course I'm not going to do that. Like, I'll have mm-hmm. these other people speak about him, like the actors and actresses.
And it's like shots from the movie.
Yep,
like,
it is.
And I mean, like, that was so cool. Like, I mean, Orson Welles, I mean, the big thing he's known for is, you know, War of the Worlds and, like, his radio broadcast. So the guy, like, he's not even in the trailer.
Yeah.
He's just talking, which is, like, such a radio announcer person thing to do, right? Like a radio broadcaster, like, I mean, it's pretty much like if one of us right now was like introducing a trailer, you guys listening, like, you know, you may have seen pictures of us or whatever, but you know, you see our posters, they have our faces on them, but like, you don't see us talking to you right now. It's kind of like if, I mean, it was such a cool trailer, like the way it was just like lights and then he's, and you know, a mic comes over and he's just talking to it. And like, it was just really cool. Like, and I wish that, I mean, first of all, it didn't necessarily need to be like 3.5 minutes long, but I would kind of love it if like we made some trailers like that today. I mean, could you imagine, not to, I mean, I'm picking on it or anything, but like if Endgame had a trailer like that, you know, like have Robert Downey Jr. and everyone behind the scenes just doing kind of like a, hey, how you doing? Come see this movie thing.
Yeah.
Like, that'd be kind of cool. Or, like, any movie coming out. Like, that would just be kind of a neat thing to do. I'm kind of upset that we don't do trailers like that anymore. I've never seen that. So, based on the trailer, and I'll read this last little bit here before we dive too deep into it. But the back of the DVD cover says, this movie is about, following the death of publishing tycoon Charles Foster Kane, reporters scramble to uncover the meaning of his final utterance, Rosebud. That's it.
Oh, okay.
That's what it says. So, with the trailer in mind and that little line there, what are your final thoughts before we dive into this? What are you expecting to see, I guess?
Well, obviously, I still think it's a rags to riches story of this guy, you know, going through so much hardship in his life. And he becomes this, like, really wealthy, you know, successful guy.
Arguably president, question mark?
Yeah, like something.
She's like, I'm going to marry him in the White House tomorrow or something?
Yeah, or,
like, okay.
I don't know, he might be, like, not the president, but, like, you know, a important political figure.
The, oh, okay.
Yeah, which is what I got from that.
Yeah,
but
also,
I mean,
he started the war? Like, what the fuck?
Which makes me think he has some involvement with, like, politics and stuff. But they also call him communist, so I'm wondering if, like, some of the stuff he did was kind of frowned upon.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if this would be a little too early to get some of the Red Scare stuff going, but it does seem like when they made this movie, that was something in the populace's mind.
Yeah, but I do think that he does, like, pass away, and feel like something crazy happens to where he just gives away all of his wealth or something crazy like that. And people just don't understand why until, like, you know, something happens and they're like, oh, I get it.
Yeah.
Like, why he
this
did
Rosebud
that.
Thing sounds like the thing that's
exactly.
Gonna make it
all. Like a code for, like, something. Yeah. It's a lot like other, like, movies, I guess, or like even short films that we have watched, where, like, you know, there's this really successful person and then they, like, do something to where they're just, like, they give away, like, everything, basically.
Scrooge.
And they're just,
It's a Scrooge story, yeah.
Yeah.
They're super greedy and then something happens and it makes them not greedy anymore and they give away their wealth or share it with other people, I guess is the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this movie, the only thing I would be curious about adding is I think that this movie, like, starts and ends in the same scene, so to speak. So, like, it starts with he died, and this reporter's like, I gotta figure it out. And then it ends with just back to the reporter, he figured it out. And, like, that, in between that, you have this 2-hour sequence of a movie, which I have to say on that note is kind of interesting that, like, I know we rant and rave about movies being too long, but I mean, this is 1941. This movie is 1 hour and 59 minutes. It might as well be an even 2 hours. So that's kind of shocking how long this movie is. So yeah, I'm kind of surprised. I'm kind of ready to, but at the same time, that trailer made me kind of ready to dive into this movie.
Mm-hmm.
How about you, Amber? Are you ready? You ready to go for this one? Number one movie.
Yeah,
ever?
I am ready to take it on.
All right. Well, go ahead and wait the few seconds for you and the approximate 2 hours for us, and you will hear our final thoughts on Citizen Kane, the greatest movie that ever happened. Wow, that movie. So, Citizen Kane. Just coming out the gate, I get it. Like, I get why this is considered, like, the best movie of all time, personally.
Yeah.
What about you? What are your thoughts just straight out the gate about this movie?
I liked it. Maybe I missed, like, a couple of things, but I didn't feel like it hit the best movie in the world.
Mm-hmm.
With the exception of, like, a few cool things that they do in there.
Yeah.
And the acting was amazing. But otherwise, I guess, like, the plot kind of fell on me. Like, maybe it was the whole idea of this. Well, we'll get into it more.
Yeah.
But basically, this investigation into his last words.
Right, right. So, before we get too deep into the plot, though, at the top of the show, we watched the trailer, as we're starting to do regularly now. And one of the things that we were going on about is just how cool that trailer was, right? Like, we were talking about, like, oh, wow, it's like a little documentary where they're meeting the cast and they're like, come see this movie. And I had thought that was how trailers were back then. Apparently not. Apparently that was actually super specific to this movie and it made everybody, it caught everybody off guard like it did you and I.
Gotcha.
And everyone was like, yeah, we did it to be like this mini documentary. And up until then, no trailer's ever done that. Most trailers were just kind of like a, hey, look at this. This is some big action stuff and all that good stuff. So I'm kind of now I'll change my statement. I'm sad that didn't keep being a thing after that.
Yeah.
I mean, that was really cool. And I mean, to be honest, if I just saw like one 45-minute behind the scenes, no spoilers documentary before a movie today, instead of the 20 trailers and like 19 of them are movies I don't want to see, I'd be fine with that.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's get into Citizen Kane. So this movie, as we said, is about, it's basically this guy, Charles Foster Kane, dies. And his last words are Rosebud. And one intrepid reporter is like, I'm going to figure out what the heck this means. I think it means something.
Mm-hmm.
This movie as a whole, I think one of the reasons it sat so nice with me is because it makes so many other references that I've seen growing up make sense that I didn't know were from this movie. 90% of those references are from The Simpsons, but I mean, this has so many things where, like, once you watch this movie, you're like, oh, holy shit, that's from this. Like, I didn't realize that was from this. And the first and foremost is the opening scene of this, is you get this grandiose, I mean, I guess Kane lives in this crazy fucking mansion on top of a man-made hill or something like that, and you're showing a zoo and a golf course. I mean, you're just showing all kinds of stuff that just clearly it's a visual aid to just show off how rich this guy is.
And they have a specific name for it.
Yeah, Xanadu.
Xanadu.
Yeah, they named it after the real place, Xanadu. Yeah. I guess they make some kind of comparison with like, oh, Xanadu was built, you know, somewhere in another part of the world, and it was like a rich palace, and Kane decided to do the same thing or something like that. So he built his, and it's this giant man-made, everything's fake. I mean, there's so many layers this movie. It is like, it's like an ogre.
You mean it's like an onion?
Yeah, or cakes. Everybody likes cakes. Yeah, so we open this movie on Kane's death. Like, Kane is this, and I'm sure if you guys haven't watched this movie yet, one, spoilers for this movie, two, I guarantee you've seen this scene in other stuff, is you just get this shot of his mouth, and it just says, he just says, Rosebud, and he drops a snow globe.
Yeah.
That shatters on the ground, and you get this such a cool shot where it's the reflection of the snow of his like butler or whatever coming into the room, but from the snow globe. I mean, I could go on and on about the cinematography in this movie all day. Apparently, I did a little bit of research while we were watching this. Apparently, the cinematographer for this movie specifically worked. He wanted to work with Wells because this movie enabled him to do a lot of like really experimental camera work that up until then hadn't been done before. So a lot of these shots, when you're seeing them in this movie, this is the first time people were seeing shots like this in a major motion picture.
Mm-hmm.
So things like just the way he uses mirrors to keep everybody in the same shot is brilliant. And like, we don't comprehending like up until this movie, that's not a thing. We see that kind of crap all the time. I mean, like, The Matrix was notorious for using reflections and stuff like that. This movie, though, is where it all came from, and I think, like, massive props to it. But anyway, he dies, and everyone's like, we got to figure out what Rosebud means. And so, basically, you get this sort of faceless reporter going through Kane's life, and he's going and meeting people who he knew or reading their diaries, journals, or whatever, and just, like, trying to figure out where is there a reference for Rosebud. And in the process, you know, we're watching flashbacks of Charles Foster Kane's sort of life from rags to riches. But honestly, I think we were a little off in how pull them up by the bootstraps they were. I thought this was going to be a very hoorah capitalism movie. This movie actually is pretty notorious at the time and was like slandered as a communist picture, if anything. And just, ooh, I mean, it's so... This movie's a lot more...
I know, and
he
didn't have to, like, really work for anything.
Right.
It just, like, came to him because he just kind of landed into this enormous fortune.
Right.
Like, a series of unfortunate events. It's, like, there. But until he reaches, like, a certain age, he can't really do anything. But even then, once he gets to that point, he decides that, you know, like, this isn't right.
Right.
Like, we shouldn't have one person owning, like, everything or one company owning everything.
Which for 1941 was like, from when I'm watching this, I'm like, wait, you what?
Yeah. Like,
I can hear that in 2020, but shit.
And then this idea of just everyone being able to access information.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter where you come from. Like, it shouldn't just be like, you
and
know,
that should
the rich.
Be true.
Yeah.
That was the, that. So yeah, the basically what happens is mom sells... defaults on owning a like a gold vein or something in the house. It's I'm sure it made a lot more sense in the 40s.
Because to me it
really
kind of maybe
on.
That was like one of the parts like I didn't understand, which was like, okay, she defaulted on this property,
right?
But then they also took her son, which I was kind of just like, that's in a weird way kind of sketch.
Well, the movie sort of first off, that's got to take us with the 18 something, yeah. Like 1880 something, I think, is when it opens. And I think even the father mentions it's kind of weird that she's doing it, but they don't. And this, again, is like this great visual work of a movie that some movies take, you just don't see it anymore. They just kind of let them tell you.
Yeah.
And this was so cool because the whole time we're doing this, the mother's very prim and proper, even though she's not rich.
Yeah.
Like, Charles is playing outside in the snow. This banker guy's there. But the dad looks like he just rolled out of bed and he's hungover.
Yeah.
And they don't tell you that he's a colossal fuck up until she says something along the lines of, like, this will keep him away from you, to the dad. And she, I guess, lets the bank raise Cain, is basically what it is. And, yeah, it's. I think they basically say that once he's 25, he will become the sixth richest man on the planet, which is bonkers to me. It's kind of, it reminded me, I wrote it in my notes, I was like, oh, we got an Anakin scenario over here, because it reminded me so much of Star Wars Phantom Menace, when he's like, you're a Jedi, and I'm going to just take you away from your family, and you're going to go live it up in the city, and Anakin's like, okay, but... Cain, I think, hits the banker guy with a sled and then runs away. And then they, you know, he lives his life. And like you said, instead of inheriting the gold mines and the oil fields and shit, he's like, he straight up writes a letter to the bank guy, Mr. Thatcher. And he's just like, I think it'd be fun to own a newspaper. So leave me the newspaper. But yeah, you can get rid of the rest of the shit. I don't want it. And they all freak out because they're like, what the hell? It's the fact that he's like, I want to run a newspaper that's the truth. And I think today in 2020, it's so interesting to watch this be a theme in 1941, you know, or arguably when they're setting it is like 1920 something, where he's like, I want to make an honest newspaper and we don't have that. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is so topical, you know, 80 years later. It's 2020 and we're still talking about this with news. And it was just, it was shocking to like see that. And I was like, holy crap, this is really different. Like you said, the acting though was great. I loved Orson Welles' little one-liners in the beginning of this movie. I think my favorite one that I wrote down is that Thatcher's like, you can't run this place, you can't run this newspaper the way you are. Like, you're running it so shoddily, you're losing $1 million a year. And Cain looks at him and goes, yeah, I lost $1 million this year, and I'll lose $1 million next year, probably. And you know what? If I keep losing $1 million a year, I'll have to close this place in 60 years. And it's just like, fuck you, get out of my building. And I'm just like, this is great. Like, a little entitled, obviously, but it was nice.
The actor was very...
Oh, Orson Welles was doing such a great job. I mean, that and the fact that everybody played the same person as they got older.
Mm-hmm.
That is something... I mean, the makeup in this movie was crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, they did a phenomenal job making everybody look older, at least for the screen. Because I was like, oh, how did they make... Like, how did they... Did they wait 30 years to film this movie again?
Yeah, which is very unlikely, so...
Yeah, no, and I mean, it's fantastic.
But it does help that you have, like, a really dark contrast with things.
Oh, for sure.
Because it just makes things...
Well, it's like Psycho with the chocolate syrup, right? Mm-hmm. You know, it can sub in for blood because there's no color.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's stuff like that where they were just using what they had to such brilliant, you know, avail here. And it worked really well. But yeah, so he owns a newspaper company. And he wants to make it honest. He also seems to make it, like... 24 hours, which at the time is pretty unheard of. Again, in 2020, like, oh, I mean, we got plenty of those.
Yeah.
just pick your party and you can find one. But yeah, we kind of get this reporter going through each of friends or his second ex-wife, and we just see everybody's opinion on him. Like, he has like a manager friend who thinks the world of him. I mean, this guy has
Mr. Bernstein
has a giant, a huge portrait of Cain in his house above his fireplace, and I'm like,
obviously idolizes the man
for sure. I mean, I'm sorry to my friends out there, but I mean, I wouldn't get a big portrait of you guys above our TV or fireplace or whatever if we had one. I mean, like, I'm not unless I'm in it too, like, it's not, I wouldn't just get a big picture of my friend. It's a little weird, but I mean, there's so much visual stuff in this movie that really just pushes that and lets you see it. You meet his former best friend, who is like an alcoholic and has a weird addiction to cigars.
Yeah.
And he's like in a retirement home in New York, and he talks to them, and they are like, yeah, he's kind of shitty, but like, he was like this. And I mean, I liked how everybody, when they tell the story and we flash back, you don't get a vantage point kind of situation where somebody's seeing it differently or we're seeing the same thing 10 times. Each person is telling a different piece of the story. And at the same time, we're seeing the reality. Like, everyone's like, this guy's dead. I'm not going to hide it. I didn't like him, or I did like him, or he was okay. But like, this is what it was. You know, we don't see like, oh, the real part was something else. But yeah, let's talk about Kane. I mean, that's what this whole movie's about, right? So start to finish, what are your opinions on Charles Foster Kane? I mean, the trailer asked that all up and down. What are your opinions, Amber?
I'm not quite sure if he was revolutionary, but I guess, like, for this film, yes. Because he obviously didn't, like, create, in a sense, like, what a newspaper was, like, back then. I'm sure mm-hmm. it was already some, like, there were already other, you know, newspaper companies when he got there. But what he, like, the idea behind it was just, like, having something that spoke the truth and then that was accessible to everyone, which I guess was revolutionary back then because, you know, only certain people got to read. And it was just kind of questionable as to, like, is it really, like, the truth or is it, you know, is there some bias? As a person, I think there was a lot of, as you can see, like, there was a lot of controversy with that. Because on one hand, like, he was very popular with at least most of the guys at his workplace and popular just among everybody. But in his personal life, like, with his exes, like, he really, like, fell short, I guess. Like, he didn't, like, I could see that he wanted to have, like, a good relationship with, like, those, the people that meant most to him, but, like, he definitely didn't live up to, like, their expectations, I guess, or he didn't really follow through with things.
Yeah, I mean, he was totally popular. He almost won being governor of, I guess, New York, wherever that sequence took place. I don't really remember. But it's, I mean, in that case, when he's, like, standing on this podium screaming, he reminds me of Bernie Sanders, but, like, really angry, like an angry Bernie Sanders. But yeah, I think you're right. He didn't do anything new, you know, he just did something in the way he thought was well. And I think this movie really shows someone who has these great intentions and does a good job with it and becomes successful. And it shows how that success perhaps can really change somebody.
Yeah.
I think one of the best things you bring up is this newspaper thing, how he, and that's like the most upfront one to me, is it's not how he becomes rich and becomes a shit bag. It's that he writes a manifesto, basically, or a constitution or whatever, a declaration, I think is what they call it. And he writes, like, this will be an honest, truthful newspaper. And he slaps on the front page of that morning's news, and they send it out. At the time, like you said, like, newspapers were notorious for, like, changing the story.
Yeah.
In order to fit whoever owns its perspective. I mean, again, this is highly topical for media today. So this movie, like, there's, and we can get into it in the latter end of this episode, but this movie, there is so much that happened surrounding this movie when it came out. I mean, there's drama going on. There is, like, vendettas going on. But basically, Wells kept this movie pretty under wraps about as far as what was it about. One of the things is they're using a lot of these millionaire rich people as archetypes for who Kane is. Most notably, and the main one, is a guy, William Randolph Hearst, who owned, like, a newspaper back then. Hearst found everything in this movie to be slander. Like, he hated the way Kane was represented and took it so personally that he used his newspaper to, like, slam this movie to make it not come out.
Dang.
It did, but it was just like, that's the kind of power these newspaper guys had, is they were able to be like, here's your news. By the way, Citizen Kane's a piece of trash. Don't ever fucking watch this movie. You know, it's garbage and they're liars and they're just slandering me. When it's like, it wasn't really about just you, but you were a big part of that inspiration. But at the same time, I'm not saying it's you. His name is Kane, not Hearst. So there's all this kind of drama back there. But the fact that they go, we're going to make an honest newspaper. And by the end of this movie,
it's not an honest newspaper.
It's not at all, because his second wife is an opera singer who is god-awful. And some of the funniest bits of this movie is everyone reacting to how god-awful
she is. And I love
her
teacher. He's just like, why can you not sing?
Oh,
like,
my God, I loved it. The angry Italian guy constantly screaming at her. It was hilarious. And it was just like, first off, the fact that this movie is still funny 80 years later, you know, that to me, I was like, that's great. Like, and there's a lot of movies that are still like that, but it wasn't so like, oh wow, that aged really poorly. I don't think there was a single part of this movie, correct me if I'm wrong, Amber, but I don't think there was a single part of this movie where we were watching it and my first thought anyway was like, ooh, that didn't age well. Like,
yeah, I don't think any of it did.
I mean, even there's a scene where he slaps his wife and you're not supposed to go, oh yeah, this is, man, that's what he does. It's like, no, this is like, he immediately like regrets what he did, even though he says he doesn't. And it's just like, it's just there. It hangs there. This movie does such a great job with pacing things where it's just like smack and there's a stare and everyone's just looking at you, the viewer, like, whoops. And you're just like, oh shit, that happened. Like, what are we doing now? And, you know, eventually they get divorced. But anyway, like, his newspaper is making her out to be this amazing triumphant singer. Mm. And everyone's like, no, she actually super sucks. And we actually watch that kind of poison her, don't we? Because she's laying on the floor surrounded by newspapers. I think this is the scene where he smacks her. She's surrounded by newspapers screaming at him.
Yeah.
And yelling at him, saying like, oh, well, your newspaper, because he slams her, doesn't he? In like the op-ed that his friend's supposed to write, and he gets drunk and all that. And she's just like, oh, how could you do this? Like, oh, you know, you're ruining me and blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, you're listening to this woman yell, and it's sort of like, you know, as far as movie time goes, 10 minutes ago, you didn't even want to do this. You know, you were working at a music shop.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just fascinating to see how, like, this kind of power almost just corrupts these people.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we really see that flex with the montage with his first wife and him in their house. Mm-hmm. And they're both just, we watch their marriage degrade in a montage over breakfast every morning. And I was like, this is such a cool sequence because it's like, I love you so much. Oh, I love you too. Oh, you should stay home from work for a little while. No, I'm not going to do that. Oh, okay. And then it just keeps going until by the end, she's reading a different newspaper than what he works. Like, she's not reading his newspaper anymore. And she, like, flaps it out and is, like, holding it there. And you just see the heading. And he's just like, and the next thing you know, they're divorced. I guess to go back to the question I asked in the first place, I think Kane is just, I think he represents really kind of everyone in such a strange way, because it doesn't matter who he is. And I think that's kind of the point, right? Is he was just a kid when he gets picked up. There's no, oh, he's some special kid. Oh, he's the nicest boy ever. He's just a straight up kid. There's nothing about him that's special. This isn't like Harry Potter or something. He's just a kid who gets a bunch of money, is raised by someone he hates, and arguably he is raised by that money when you think about it. Like, I think that's what's kind of trying to show here, is like, this is a kid that's raised by money, mm-hmm. not by parents, not by his mom, not by his dad, by this money, by a bank. And this is what you get. You get this character who they describe as like, all he wants is to love someone and for someone to love him. And he's using his wealth to achieve that in any way possible. He gives his second wife a flippin' opera house, for Christ's sake, just because they wouldn't let her sing at the Chicago Theater. He's like, oh, fine, I'll open an opera house. And it's like, money's not an option to this guy, so he's just trying to buy everybody's love, to the point where the only people that exist in his crazy Xanadu Island place is him and his second wife in this giant, empty mansion. And she hates it there. All she does is puzzles, and she hates him for it. And he's like, no, we just got to stay here. And, you know, he squeezes tighter and tighter and tighter, and eventually she just leaves him. You get to the end of the movie where you, the viewer, are shown all of these luxurious things that Kane owns. And that's kind of a thread throughout the movie, isn't it? I didn't really think about that till now, but pretty much from the minute he starts the newspaper, Kane is, like, constantly going to France and Italy and Europe and stuff, and he's just buying junk.
Yeah, like, he collects things. And
like, statues, primarily. Mm-hmm. Like, a very, and, I, you know, obviously it's to show off wealth. It's a very expensive thing to buy, and he's shipping them back to his newspaper. You know, you have him with all, you have all this crap. At the end of the movie, after he's dead, they're getting rid of the stuff of his estate.
It literally looks like the Room of Requirement. Like, it, when I looked at it, yeah. I was like, oh my gosh, because they have, like, so much stuff, just, like, you know, chairs and whatnot, just stacked on top of each other.
Oh, all I could think of was Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark, at the end, when he's like, top men. And then it cuts to them, like, moving the ark in the crate and amongst all the other crates. And it looked, they do a shot, like a panning shot that's kind of like that to me, when they're just going all over his junk. And it's, I mean, they do such a great job with this, because this is like a long fading over and over tracking shot after tracking shot, where it's just stuff and stuff and stuff and stuff and junk, and they're just burning some of it. They're like, this is just junk. We can't get rid of it. Fuck it. Burn it all. In the last scene you get in the movie, they throw in a sled, just like the one he had when he was a little kid. And on the sled is written Rosebud. And poof, it goes in a flame. I guess here's the question I have for everyone listening and for you, Amber. How do you take that scene? What does that scene mean?
After watching everything, I honestly think it just means nothing. Because I think sometimes we try and put meaning to something, and it really, there is no meaning. Like, we just make things up for it to make sense to us. I think they were, you know, the reporters were trying to figure out, oh, why did he say Rosebud? Did it mean a girl? Did it mean...
Yeah, they do go over that.
Yeah, did it mean something else? And it might have, like, meant something to him in his past life. Maybe the only thing that he held onto that really mattered to him. But in a sense, like, it doesn't really reappear until the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And you don't see him, like, riding around on the sled or anything like that. So I really think it just, it didn't really mean anything.
Wow, okay. All of his wealth, all the things don't mean anything at the end of it. You know, his two marriages mean nothing. His house means nothing. It means so little that by the time he's dead, they're lighting it on fire and throwing it away.
Yeah.
I guess to me, though, Rosebud is not so... I would almost like separate the name from the sled. The sled's just what it's called, but it's... He had everything. But from the minute he started getting everything, he hated it. He hated everything. He wasn't happy. I mean, you get this shot right in the first Christmas after the bank inherits him or whatever. He's all dressed up and they give him a sled for Christmas and he looks, he says thank you and gives Mr. Thatcher like a stank eye that I have if I ever saw one. Like, this kid fucking hates him from the minute he meets him. And I think it's that the one time you do see Kane truly happy, not faking it, not being snotty, not any of that, is when you see him as a kid just sledding down the hill outside of his house when they're discussing sending the kid away. I think for him it was like his entire life was, how can I recapture that? But now, since he was raised on nothing but money, it becomes the only way I can acquire things. They even mentioned this at the beginning, is he doesn't invest his money. He just buys shit.
Yeah.
I think Thatcher gives him some shit for that when the depression hits. He's like, you know, you never were good at investing money. You just use it to get things. And he's like, yeah, I know, whatever, blah, 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 blah. I think he's just constantly using his wealth and his charisma and every single sort of tool in his arsenal to recapture, you know, that moment of sitting on Rosebud sledding down a hill. It's so simple. It's so just, you're
which
a kid.
Which he could have done that at any point, but he didn't. He just kept getting farther and farther away from that.
And I think that's because he loses it. I mean, look at all of us that grew up in the 90s.
Mm.
How much nostalgia for the 90s is there? You know, it's huge. And of course, you know, our generation isn't the first ones to have it. But how many times is it like last night, the two of us watched Jurassic Park, a movie from 1993. We watch that instead of, I don't know, something brand new. And it's sort of like that movie sits more with us because it's like, oh my God, I remember growing up with this. And it's like you're trying to recapture what was it like when you first saw Jurassic Park. It's just you're never going to get it because you've seen it. You know what it is. You can't blink it out of your mind and watch it again.
Yeah.
And even if you did, you're older. You're not a little kid. It's going to be different. And I think for him, it was just he thought, I have everything. I have all the money in the world. I can do it because I have all this money. You can't. You know, you can't capture. I think Rosebud for him meant a family who loved him. A time when he was happy. The whole movie is he tries to become governor and everyone loves him. And then they're so quick to turn on him because of a proposed affair that may or may not have actually happened. I mean, I couldn't really tell if it was... Were they screwing around?
I felt like they were screwing around.
screwing around too? And I mean, they were both very like, it's not like that. It's actually this other weirder thing where he just likes hearing me sing. And I'm like, that's arguably weirder. And I mean, that's a conversation for another time. But so I think it's just him trying to recapture what it was to be loved when he was a kid, which you're never going to get back as an adult, whether you have millions and millions of dollars or you have nothing. I think that's sort of where Rosebud lands for me. And I think it's kind of interesting because it's like I put so much stock into this and you're like, it doesn't mean anything. Like, it doesn't mean anything because it's just another thing. And I think maybe it's the two combined. Maybe at the end of the day, it is just another thing. And this putting so much meaning into stuff is what you get out of it. I mean, this movie, my God, I love this movie. You can pull so much out of it. I mean, even just with you, what you and I said, sound like they're on two opposite ends of this. But then the minute you put them together, it's like, oh, he put so much fucking stock into this meaningless sled that at the end of the day, his life was just as meaningless because it was just invested in things. Boom, there's a whole other thread you can pull out of this movie. There's just so much crazy shit that went on. But yeah. Other crazy things that happen in this movie, though, is Orson Welles apparently, like, there's a scene when he's yelling at his rival in the gubernatorial race, and he's like, "You'll never get me." He's yelling from the top of the stairs. Orson Welles actually fell off those stairs and was in a wheelchair, like, directly from a wheelchair for a few months. And I wouldn't doubt if that scene when he's getting pushed around his mansion, if that was maybe like, yeah, I'm getting pushed around because, like, I actually broke my leg and you know, let's just do it now. I'm not really going to get too much into it because guys listening at home or wherever, you know, we're all under quarantine right now. You can look up a lot of this stuff. I mean, there are books written about this movie, for Christ's sake. There is so much that happened surrounding this movie's release, surrounding just the people in it. I mean, the trailer, for Christ's sake, is like a 3-minute little documentary of this movie. To me, this movie was so, like, revolutionary for its time, and there's so much that comes out of it. So, this is supposed to be the number one movie of all time. Personally, I get it. I get it as the number one movie. It may not be my favorite movie of all time, but it is supposed to be number one. That being said, where would you put this in sort of your own personal, like, movie canon, Amber? Like, you don't have to give it a solid number. I mean, we've seen lots of movies, but, like, you know, is it in your top, like, 5, 10, 100? Like, where would you put this movie in a top list for you?
Probably, like, a top 100, but definitely not, like, top 50.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So this would be, like, number 51 plus on your list.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, I guess I want to hear more of, like, your opinions on this, because you have such a different opinion than me on this movie. So, like, what's making you lean this way for this stuff?
I think just because there are other films out there that are kind of more revolutionary in terms of, like, really hard topics that, like, people don't want to discuss. And, like, this kind of, like, it touched on it, but it didn't delve into it. Like, I think the biggest thing I got out of it was, like, the relationships that he had. This control he seemed to have over women, which obviously is, like, a big thing, because especially in TV shows, movies now that we've seen, like BoJack Horseman, where they discuss, like, this idea of a man having power over women and just kind of making them do things, especially things that, like, don't want to do just to make them, like, happy or feel good about themselves. And so I enjoyed, like, the movie for what it was, but I didn't get that, like, shivers down my spine.
Yeah, okay.
Like, feeling, because usually when it's a good movie, that's how I feel about it. Like, right. I remember it. It's kind of seared into your brain.
Yeah.
And I don't think that movie quite did it for me.
I could very confidently say this movie would probably sit in, like, my top 20.
Okay.
I don't know if I want to push it to top 10, though it might be sitting in that realm. I'd have to really think on it. But to me, I guess maybe I'm framing it in the period, and I'm not the most well-versed with movies from the 30s and 40s, but to me, this movie was perhaps cinematically, it's so revolutionary. The sound design, the costuming, the camera angles, just the cinematography in general of that angle of it all is great. It does so much stuff that, like, you don't see these shots where you're getting, like, a profile of someone in the shadow or you're using light. I mean, I could go on and on about this movie, and so many people have probably said it better than I can. But, I mean, the way they use light, sound design in this movie is amazing. The way they use the set. That all being said, you're absolutely right. As far as the plot of this movie goes, to me it hit so hard because it was surprisingly modern. You could take the points of this movie and you could do it today and it would still read pretty much the same. Maybe give or take the news, like, sub out things to modernize it, newspaper for maybe news station or something like that. But at the end of the day, it hits the same with the themes. And to me, I mean, I said at the top of the show, I thought this was going to be like, oh, we're going to really have to look at this through like a 1940s lens. But no, I mean, I was able to watch this in a 2020 state and it was fine. It made sense. I guess my question there is, do you think that if this movie didn't happen, would things like the discussions you mentioned in BoJack Horseman and other pieces of television and movies, you think those would have happened?
No, I think other movies still would have came out that would have kind of blown this away.
Hmm.
And they would have taken, you know, that top 10 or top, that first place in like the top 10
so you think
American films.
Think maybe push this movie forward 10, 20 more years, you'd get an even further stepping movie. Like a Citizen Kane of 1965 that takes a little bit bigger of a step in like countercultural kind of way. I mean, because this movie, like, arguably for the 40s, yeah. I mean, it does talk about things like how he wants to help the working man. I mean, it's got those themes of like what at the time was considered communist, you know. Mm-hmm. It's talking about this stuff.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. It doesn't take it as far as it could. And that to me is what I wonder is like, if we push this movie to the 60s, do we get some more clear-cut flaws in Kane? Or is this movie better because we have that ambiguity of him, you know? So I guess the final big question, we don't need to get into the budget. It involves all kinds of math and figuring out what, in 2020 money, what that actually is. And clearly budget wasn't exactly a problem for this film. I mean, just as much. I mean, they at least
just like
do
with
it.
The setups and everything.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they do clever things like to make it look like there's more people. Like, I think you pointed this out. When we were watching it, to make it look like there's more people in the audience, they like poke holes in a piece of fabric and then just have a mirror, I think you said, underneath.
Yeah, or something reflecting light through.
Right.
So it
and
was
so
like a picture,
like,
and yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, that's stuff like that's brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, nowadays it's like click in a computer. I mean, it's more complicated than that, not to belittle like, you know, CGI work or artists or anything like that. But I mean, like, you have computers that can run this kind of stuff. But back then it was like, all right, I got a rubber band, two paper clips, and a piece of beige paper. How the hell do I make it look like there's 30 people in this audience? It's like, well, what if we poke holes and just bounce it around? Oh my God. Like, here's MacGyver this whole movie, and it's cool. But out of our standard 10, you know, moment of truth, what are you giving this movie?
I would give it like a 9 out of 10.
Really?
Yeah.
You'd give it a straight up 9 out of 10. No, don't let anybody bias you here. Like, your genuine opinion of this movie, 9 out of 10?
Yeah, I would say it was pretty good. It's just like when you were talking about everything, but you were saying that personally, like, you don't have to like it, but you could still appreciate everything that's in the movie or that's going on in the movie. And so I definitely appreciate what's going on. I definitely appreciate, like, you know, the setting that it takes place within and all of these like topics. But like personally, like, it's not my favorite film. And maybe if I watched it again, like, it would make more sense to me, because there were things like I didn't really understand like right away until we like discussed it.
Right.
But yeah, like, that's just what I think.
Yeah. I mean, I could totally see that. I mean, there were a lot of things in this movie where the only reason I understood what the hell was happening was because I knew historically what was happening.
Yeah. And like, that was the thing I was missing, I guess, like the historical context
with
it.
But even then, there's so much stuff. I mean, that's the problem with all these movies is as they age, they're good movies. I mean, as a piece of art, this movie is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just,
and I guess
focus
that's
away
why, like,
I
appreciated
yeah.
like my literature classes, because before we would watch a movie, like, we would discuss like the context
behind
it, and then like once we watched it, it was like, this makes a lot of sense, and like, I love this movie.
Yeah.
But I think here we just kind of like went into it without really knowing anything.
Well, I mean, you know, we're told, and this is kind of why I said perhaps overhyped, because it's like, we're told this is the greatest movie of all time. So, I mean, if it's still holding that in 2020, mm-hmm. I should be able to, you know, access it.
Yeah.
But there were things in this movie where it was like, oh, whoa, this is a, you know, this is a perspective on some like aspect of the Great Depression, mm-hmm. or like some... We kind of gloss over, like, things.
I didn't really relate
weird.
To it. And maybe it's just because, like, again, we're living in, like, the 21st century.
Yeah, this movie takes place, like, in the mid-20s.
We've come a long way from that. I mean, there are things we are dealing with that the main character was dealing with back then.
Yeah.
In terms of, like, relationships, in terms of, like, you know, this whole communism shit.
Yeah. Well, like, the politics and everything.
Politics,
in
yeah.
general, it's
things
just,
like
it's
that.
So
we're
applicable.
Still dealing with the same things,
mm-hmm.
yet like there are some things that are you know, very different and that, yeah. like, I wouldn't be able to experience.
I completely agree. I mean, there's so many parts of this movie where I'm just like, what? And, you know, it's because that scene in the movie takes place over 100 years ago now, mm-hmm. which is wild to think about. But there's so much of this movie where it's like, I do understand it because I, you know, knew the history behind it. But even then, I didn't live it, so I don't know it that well. I know what I read in a book once upon a time in, like, high yeah. school. I don't know what they're talking about. And I think that's always the trouble with a lot of these older movies is they're good, but, like, they're starting, and I think it's scary. It's a little scary because this movie is, in my opinion, a masterpiece. I'll straight up say here, it's 10 out of 10. This movie's 10 out of 10. At the very least, I had no problem with this movie. Like, it's a product of its time. But that even being said, there was nothing in this movie that made me go, ooh, that didn't age well. Like, it all aged fine, except perhaps, like you said, some of the references to things. Or when they're talking about events, or just some things that are in that kind of zeitgeist of the time where it's like, yeah, I didn't live through the 30s, so I don't know what that's like, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's a scary thing, I think, that maybe we need to, like, as a, you know, movie-going public, kind of start paying attention to, is, like, movies like this that are fantastic in every way, are we maybe at risk of losing this? Not because the movie gets lost, but because people won't get it anymore. You know? And I like
not having at least a discussion right. or like learning about it in school.
Yeah, and it's such because an interesting it's
like,
thing.
You think of other ones like Midsummer Night's Dream or, you know, old classics like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, like Shakespeare, anything. It's like, yeah, why do they do half the shit they do? Like, and it's yeah. like, well, that was the time.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you don't yeah. get the jokes until you talk about it.
Right.
Because those jokes, you could just read it and you're like, what? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Right. And you have to know, well, back then they used this word to mean this, and this was an innuendo for that, and then this meant doing this thing with your hand, and you ultimately get a joke about jerking it.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, why don't you just
say, exactly.
why don't you just say that? And it's like, well, because they wanted to make it okay for you guys to read this in school. But, yeah, no, yeah. I agree. As they say things, there's references, there's things in this movie that make mm-hmm. it so
different. I mean, these are things that people study, like, yeah, for their, oh, for sure. you know, I mean, like I said, I'm sure. and yeah. in life. There's a reason why we have people just oh, doing yeah. that.
And I'm happy they do it, too, because this, I mean, this is a movie that, things that come from this movie cinematically in the special effects world and just thematically, like, they're things that, as we found, are still things that are in movies today and frankly should still be in movies. Like, not yeah. just aping it on The Simpsons, but, like, there are things that happen in this movie that just, like, yeah, I'm so happy that some of these shots, like these crazy tracking shots through windows and things mm-hmm. that are so masterfully cut.
Yeah.
And I'm like, the only way I can fathom doing that in the 40s is taking a camera, walking towards the window, zooming in on the window, and then stopping, putting the camera on the other side of the window, and then continuing the shot. And then when you're editing, finding that perfect frame and just cutting and splicing it right there. And then that way it fades through. Nowadays, I can get on a computer and do that no problem. You know, I can make a CGI window and just mm-hmm. make the whole shot fake.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like, it doesn't make it easier. There are extra steps to do that. But it's just the fact that they were able to do that in 1941 is awesome. And it's those kind of inspirational motifs that you see today that are, you know, I've been going on about it all night, but I think that, you know, maybe like with movies like this, people, I think this could be a great example of like why we should learn history in a way is like, so you can enjoy stuff that other people enjoy. It doesn't have to be necessarily just all the terrible things that happened in history. You have to know all about them because what if we do it again? Arguably, that's a fair point, but like, there's stuff that I'm sure we would have gotten out of this movie that, or like our grandparents might get out of this movie, or great-grandparents even that would have gotten out of this movie, that we would have never thought of. But because they were alive when it came out, they were like, oh yeah, that thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, well, shit, okay. Wow, I didn't see that coming. But yes, I'll give this movie a 10 out of 10. It's 10 out of 10 easy for me. That all being said, this episode's probably a lot longer than some of our other ones. And man, we could go on and on for hours. I could go on and on for hours about this. So if you guys want to keep this conversation going, maybe see if you can pull back some of the other layers this movie has to offer, because I know I didn't get to half the ones I wrote down. Hit us up on our website, swhn19.com. hit us up on our Facebook page, So What Happens Next. Check out our Instagram, where you can get all of our cool posters, especially for this movie. I hope people like it. It's one of my more favorite posters, I think, that we did, just because the cover was so perfect for two people's faces. But, you know, and Twitter, of course. Twitter handle at So What Happens N1. Yeah, just check us out. Keep this conversation going in the comments and threads or whatever for all of those things. I mean, you know, let us know what you guys thought of this movie. I dare not go into the reviews for some of these movies that we do, just because some of them are a little like, oh, you're putting it there to be a troll. And it gets hard. Yeah. It really gets hard. I'll be honest, it gets hard to find some of the like genuine, I really hated this movie kind of type things. But anyway, let us know what you think. Out of 10, what would you give this movie? You know, and what did you get out of this movie? Or after hearing us talk about it, do you want to watch this movie now? If you haven't seen it, I hope we didn't ruin it for you. So with that all being said, Amber, what do we have next week?
Next week, we have Candyman, 1991.
Ooh, Tony Todd in Candyman.
Yes, who was recently here in Chicago, and we missed him.
I know, I'm upset. I am upset that happened twice in a row.
But anyways, hope you guys are looking forward to that.
Yeah, apparently they're making a sequel. We'll talk about it all. Well, they've already made sequels, but they're making a new sequel with Jordan Peele's producer. So, you know, fingers crossed that's going to be something interesting. But yeah, so join us next week when we talk about 1991's Candyman, kind of taking a big spin from the classic 40s movies and going straight on to the 90s horror. So until next week, I am one of your hosts, Thomas.
I'm Amber.
And we'll see you guys with...